Your membership isn't just a donation. It's momentum that inspires our team at KPBS to keep delivering trusted information and inspiring storytelling. New members create a tipping point for generations to come. Your support today ensures that KPBS remains an essential presence in San Diego. Call 1-800-576-5727 or give online at kpbs.org. And thanks.
It's time for Midday Edition on KPBS. For today's Arts and Culture Show, we are celebrating Black women in leadership, making poetry more accessible, and talking about the Oscars. I'm Jade Hindman with conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and engaged. The Women of Color Roar Breakfast this weekend is changing narratives and building resilience.
We have to celebrate Black women because Black women are not celebrated.
Plus, Julia Dixon Evans talks with San Diego's new poet laureate. Then, Beth and Yazdi talk to me about the Oscars and weekend events. That's ahead on Midday Edition. This Saturday, the nonprofit Women of Color Roar Media will hold a breakfast celebrating the accomplishments of Black women in leadership and their contributions to San Diego and this country. I'm joined now by two women who exemplify that and are continuing to do important work in the community. Angela DeJoseph is the founder and president of Women of Color Roar. Also with us is Cheryl Alethea Phelps, Chief Communications Officer for the American Civil Liberties Union of San Diego and Imperial County. She will be one of the honorees at the breakfast. Angela and Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Jade. It's nice to be here.
Thank you, Jade. I'm glad to be here.
So glad to have you both here. So, Angela, what started back in 2018 as a breakfast to celebrate African-American women who were elected officials has really grown. What can you tell us about this year's breakfast and what it represents?
Well, Jade, this year, the theme is rooted in resilience. And we thought it was really important to bring our community together and draw on our strengths. I felt that there was a need right now, emotionally, for some healing. And we felt that it was also important that we celebrate our wins and bring some joy back to the young women in our community.
Well, and can you talk about why it's so important to celebrate and build on the legacy of Black women here in San Diego? I mean, is that part of building resilience, given the current social and political climate?
Yes. Women of Color Roar started because I went to Washington, D.C. about 10 years ago, and I visited the Rayburn building where all of the, you know, congresspeople have their offices. And I went office to office and I did not see young people in internships and in these jobs that looked like me. And I realized that the reason was because, one, you had to have access. So you had to know someone. The other thing is resources. And people who come from underserved communities don't have the resources to send their child off to Washington to get an internship that leads them into these careers. So I created something where we could bring these young women together with elected officials and start the pipeline by providing them with the access and resources so they could run for office and they could get careers in the public sector.
Right. I want to circle back to that, too. But Cheryl, you're one of this year's honorees. So congratulations to you on that.
Thank you. Thank you. It is quite an honor.
Yeah. I mean, what does it mean to you to be selected and celebrated in this way?
I'll tell you in a couple ways. First, the timing was particularly profound. I just lost my brother, my younger brother, suddenly. And
sorry.
Thank you. And was questioning whether it was worth it, whether the work that I do, the intensity, the focus that I have to give to work was worth it. And I got a call from a colleague of Angela's about this. I didn't know that was why she was calling. And I was reluctant to take the call because I didn't want another condolence call. And then it was a call honoring me for being resilient. And I can't tell you what that meant. The second reason why this is moving for me is, I don't remember what year it was, Angela. I think it was maybe it was before the pandemic when you honored my mother.
Yes. And, I think that was 2019.
Yeah, it was the year before the pandemic. My mother at that time was an assisted living facility, so we were always late to everything. And I did not know she was being honored. I just know that I was asked, would you bring your mother? Would you bring your mother? And we were very late because she was at that point, you know, everything had to be just so before we could leave. And I wheeled her in and we had a seat in the front. That was curious. And she all of a sudden from the dais, Angela, said some words and complimented and honored my mother for her part of her career. My mother had an extraordinary career. She was a very talented and achieved woman. And people started coming up to her in the audience and thanking her for her contributions to our community and our culture and our region as a whole. And I should say at that time, my mother was 94 years old. When we were leaving in the car, I told her, I thought that was the nicest thing. And she said, I wish I were braver. And if you knew how accomplished she was, the humility of that statement, and also recognizing that there was one more thing she wished she'd done, or maybe a few more things if she had just stretched that bit more or just took that one chance. And that has actually affected, you know, the rest of my life and thinking that my very accomplished mother wished she were braver. And so, yeah, this is a being resilient is about being braver. That time that it just feels like you can't do it, finding it within you to be braver.
The reason, and most people, and I'm not from, you know, San Diego, but people that are from here all know Cheryl's mother, and she was one of the first female physicians in San Diego County. And so, you know, for a Black woman to go to medical school, become a physician, and all the other things that her mother did, but I felt it was important to recognize her mother, having her, you know, in our presence, you know, and so honoring our elders, honoring our ancestors, that's really what we're doing, especially this Saturday. But I want to say that there's a number of Black women who you see them, but they're kind of behind the scenes. And so Cheryl is such a brilliant, accomplished person there at the ACLU. And then her whole background that she's had in her many roles in legislature and even in party politics and different things that she's done are so magnificent. And so I thought it was important for people to get a chance to know more about her and about her accomplishments. And that's why she's getting a Woman Warrior Award, because she's in the fight, she's been in the fight, but you can see the pattern from her mother. And so us coming out of those women and being able to be accomplished, we have to turn around and we have to appreciate that. And I wanted the younger generation to know, it's not over. You might lose one election, but Black women are resilient.
But I think it's important to recognize that resilience isn't inherent. I do think it's something that we, as Angela was mentioning, that we learn from those who are closest to us, our mothers, our aunties, or those people in our lives who get up every day. But it's developed out of necessity. Mm-hmm. And the challenges that Black women face in this country should not be romanticized, because we've got to focus on why we need to be resilient. There are systemic inequities that create this need for resilience, and we've been rising up to this for generations. And that's what I think is often lost. And I'm appreciative of Angela for bringing us together where we celebrate this, because it's not just celebrating those of us who are here now, but reaching back and recognizing where we came and why we've come.
And for our listeners who don't know, Cheryl's mother was Shirley Jenkins Phelps, who, like Angela said, was San Diego County's first African-American woman to be a physician. And later she became the region's first Black psychiatrist. So, Cheryl, you're continuing to honor that legacy and build on the work of our elders with your work at the ACLU, where you're fighting against harmful narratives that seek to marginalize people. Can you talk about why that work is so important, especially at a time when so many groups of people are being targeted with these negative narratives?
As people of color, and I can't speak for everyone who's here, and I certainly can't speak for the radio audience, and I'll speak for myself. As a person of color, I recognize how marginalized the voices of people who look like me, who have my cultural heritage, how we can be on the menu rather than at the table. And the what happens to people who are unhoused, what happens to people who are immigrants, who don't have the ability to tell their own story, and yet their story is shaped by outside influences. I'll use some current examples. And in fact, in your own reporting, you indicated that between, I'm looking at my notes here, 150,000 to 170,000 people in San Diego County don't have legal status, which means that they are vulnerable to mass deportation. And that can destabilize families, neighborhoods, workplaces in our region. And there are additional 150,000 people who lived in mixed status homes. The criminalization of people who are unhoused ignores the root cause of homelessness and dehumanizes people who are experiencing it. This is why we have to be about this work, because it's one of those, you know, by the grace of God, there I go, right? Mm-hmm. We have to be mindful of the fact that as marginalized people, if we don't take control of our narratives, if we're not able to stand up and say, I have the right to be here like everyone else, then we run the risk of being excluded, marginalized, isolated, ignored, deported, incarcerated, and otherwise treated as with less dignity and humanity than anyone deserves.
Mm-hmm. And I know the work can be taxing, and it requires resilience. And the expectation of that, though, can be taxing in and of itself, as you alluded to earlier. So what are you all doing to stay resilient? Angela, I'll start with you on that.
Well, that's a good question, because I'm one of the people that gets very much out of balance, because yeah. When I'm in work mode, I'm all the way in work mode, you know? So mm-hmm. I always tell myself, okay, you're going to get up and go to the gym, or you're going to get up and walk. But I start my day and I start working, and it just, you know, keeps going. And so periodically though, I do go to the Optimum Health Institute and go on a complete retreat, you know, eat raw foods, workout. And I come back looking amazing, of course, and then, you know, start this whole process over again. So that's, I can't say that I found a way in terms of being able to be resilient. One thing is having economic means. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the numbers here in San Diego, of course, the people that are struggling the most are Black women here and older Black women. And as somebody who is now getting to that description where people call me ma'am now, we're the group of Black women now that if we can't survive on Social Security, which something could happen, we end up with homeless. And so part of going back to the young women that we sponsor to come to the breakfast, we started the Leadership Academy to give them the opportunity to get financial literacy training, learn about getting scholarships to college, be able to get mentors, but also put on the light for them so they could see what the world is like out there. And as far as this moment in time, where we don't know what's going to happen in terms of any kind of public subsidies for healthcare, for education, for housing, it's really important that we become economically sound and that we're able to teach how to be able to position yourself and your family for, you know, for financial success.
Resilience and self-sufficiency, which is resilience.
Yes. Yeah, which is yes. Resilience.
Yeah. Cheryl, what about you? How are you staying resilient, and what can the community do to help keep Black women and other women of color resilient?
Like Angela, I have to confess, I don't spend enough time on myself. So that actually is something that I'm making a point of changing. But I will say that I do have rituals every morning. I open up all of the blinds and the doors. Mm-hmm. And I usually take a long walk with my dog in the morning. And I start my day that way every day. I have good friends that I have long laughs with. Sometimes you even have to laugh about the hard things in life. And I'm really fortunate that I have just a wonderful circle of people who care about me. They find things for me to do. The other thing I do is I love art. I like building things. And I actually have started working on a house, a small house. I started calling it my therapy. And I tore down the walls and rebuilt them. I had some help. Built the cabinets, the counters, all that type of thing. That's very satisfying for me. And so that's one of the things that I've done to distract myself. But I do find, and this was actually a theme that we had one year at the ACLU, I find joy in resistance. You know, the community of people who want something better and we fight for it. And that is still something that invigorates me. There are tough times, as I described at the top of the program, but I do find that invigorates my life.
Mm-hmm. It is self-care. It is the moments that force us to be present. It's resistance. All of those things keep us resilient, for sure. Well, I've been speaking with Angela DeJoseph, founder and president of Women of Color Roar Media, and Cheryl Alethea Phelps, chief communications officer for the ACLU of San Diego and Imperial Counties. Cheryl and Angela, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, Julia Dixon Evans sits down with San Diego's new Poet Laureate.
So offering maybe new possibilities and new opportunities for people who otherwise maybe never thought of poetry as something they would ever come close to.
KPBS Midday Edition is back after the break.
Watch programs on your schedule with the KPBS Plus streaming service. See new episodes of Nature and Nova, latest news from PBS NewsHour and KPBS Evening Edition, local shows like Ken Kramer's About San Diego. Learn more at kpbs.org/kpbsplus.
You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. San Diego Poetry has a new ambassador. Earlier today, the city announced that Paola Capo Garcia will take on the role of Poet Laureate. Capo Garcia is a former journalist and current educator. She will succeed Jason Magabo Perez as an advocate for literary arts across the region. KPBS arts reporter Julia Dixon Evans sat down with Capo Garcia in studio to talk about her hopes to demystify poetry and make it more accessible to the public. Here's that conversation.
Okay, starting from the beginning, can you remember the first time that you connected with a poem or a poet? And what was that, and how did it reach you?
Sure. I was 15, so I was a sophomore in high school, and I felt like I needed a sort of private outlet.
Mm.
I was a dancer for many years. I did a lot of acting, different things, but those felt like they felt very public, right? The sort of externalizing everything. And I liked the idea that putting something in a journal or in a poem can afford you that privacy. And then if you want to make it public later, you can, but it's up to you. And I was gifted a journal. And I always had a diary growing up, right? But the journal felt more official now that I was 15, 16. I was like, oh, this isn't a diary. This is going to be for writing pieces. And I wrote my first poem, a really terrible poem, but it feels special nonetheless. We all have to write terrible things mm-hmm. to get to better things. And I was obsessed. I just kept writing and writing and writing. And I was exposed in high school to Garcia Lorca's work, and that was very inspiring to me. And Langston Hughes' work as well. Especially my senior year of high school, I started reading a lot of Langston Hughes. And the musicality in his work, and also what he's wrestling with in those poems, the way that he's wrestling with history actively in those poems, that was very moving to me.
Mm. Can you talk a little bit about your personal journey and your history from Puerto Rico to San Diego and how it has maybe informed your approach to being a poet in this place?
So I grew up in San Juan, Puerto Rico, in an area called Miramar. Miramar represent, always. And I came to the U.S. During undergrad. I went to Syracuse University for my 4 years of undergrad, and I studied journalism there, but English and textual studies as well. And I worked as a journalist in New York City for a couple years, focused mainly on Latin entertainment, specifically music and film. And it didn't feel right to me. It felt like something I liked. It didn't feel like something I loved. And that really, really pushed me. And that's when I decided to apply to MFA programs and MA programs. And so I went to UC Davis for 2 years and got my MA in English there, and also wrote a poetry manuscript there that is trash. We don't talk about that manuscript. And then went, that's what brought me to San Diego, is an MFA program at UCSD. And so I think I was hopping around every 2 years, it felt, from Puerto Rico to Syracuse to New York City to Davis to San Diego. And when I got here, it felt like, oh, I'm here, mm-hmm. right? This is my other home. Other than San Juan, this feels like my other home. And I think that movement, that sort of restlessness and trying to search what home looked like for me or what it could be, it definitely inspires some of my poetry in terms of trying to find and carve out spaces for myself in this world. I think everything about my Puerto Rican upbringing informs my writing. In some of my poems, for me, it's really important to have little Easter eggs for Puerto Rican readers that like only they will understand, because you feel really far away from home. And it feels like maybe through the text I can make that connection with people. But it's, yeah, culturally, my longing, right, to be in Puerto Rico, to connect with it, the sort of political complication of being from Puerto Rico, and wanting to connect with others and make them understand what Puerto Rico is. Because like San Diego, I think Puerto Rico is another place that is very, very misconstrued. And so that thrust or that desire to clarify, I feel like that's a big part of my writing.
You are an educator. Is there something in your recent classroom experience that stands out as meaningful or even surprising as it comes to sharing poetry with young people?
There are a lot of things that come to mind, because I would do poetry was the main thing that I would focus on every semester. We would do research essays, we'd do personal narratives, a lot of things, but poetry was the heart of the class. And students knew that coming into my class. I was the 12th grade English lit teacher. And so they'd come in and they'd say, we heard we're going to do a lot of poetry with you. And they would be really, really skeptical about it. And so much of my energy went into showing them a side of poetry that they had never seen. And with that came showing them contemporary writers, right? To show them that poetry is this thriving thing, right? That it exists out in the world. We're not just reading Walt Whitman. We're not just reading, writers from the early 20th century. And you can imagine that during the pandemic, right? We're talking 2020, 2021, right? As we're seeing this movement and this push, right? To seek justice for George Floyd, for Ahmaud Arbery, for Breonna Taylor. So that felt like a really important moment to get them to express the anger, the rage, the confusion, whatever it is that they were feeling, and to then use a text like Claudia Rankine's Citizen to give them a language and a historical awareness of how exactly we came to this moment in time in 2020 and 2021. Mm. For me, it felt like the most powerful semester or year that I've ever had, because of the conversations that the students allowed me to have with them and because of the rawness of what they were expressing in their writing.
How do you see your role as Poet Laureate in San Diego connecting poetry to the city today?
I think my role as San Diego Poet Laureate is one of stewardship in some way, of just offering you something. It's not about saying that this is the only mode to interpret or channel your feelings, but this is a mode, right? That this is a way to do it. And so offering maybe new possibilities and new opportunities for people who otherwise maybe never thought of poetry as something they would ever come close to. I also see my role as someone who can continue with Jason to demystify poetry, right? To dispel whatever misconceptions we have about poetry and really think of it as something of the people, that it is an incredibly democratic and accessible form of writing, that as long as you can feel things, you can write a poem.
I'd love to ask you to read some poetry. Can you talk about what you've brought to read?
Sure. I'm going to be reading from my book, Clap For Me, That's Not Me. It came out in 2018 out of Rescue Press. And I wrote this book during my MFA at UCSD. And I'm going to read a poem that's called Yellow. And this poem is inspired by Gertrude Stein. She had a line that said, "Dirty is yellow." And I remember one time I was applying to a job, and one of the questions was maybe rather problematically, but the person asked me, how would you describe the color yellow to a blind person? And the only thing I could think of was Gertrude Stein's line, and I said, dirty. So that I have that very carved in my brain. I really love how Gertrude Stein experimented with language and imagery. So this poem is called Yellow, inspired by her. When I was young, I thought the soul was a body part. To the right of my heart and in between the pre-breasts, this soul thing would nest. And then one day it fell out. No, it stuck around too long and made a house of my insides. The walls were yellow, which I now know is the color of hunger, and that's why I crave baby chicks and gold. There was so much furniture shoved inside of me, and even if the decor was mid-century, the style was mortal. My memory is hungry. She wanted me to paint my face every morning. Makeup could enhance, better, make use of this face. But then my dog licked the second face off, clean. That is my favorite movie.
That was KPBS arts reporter Julia Dixon Evans speaking with San Diego's new poet laureate, Paola Capo Garcia. Capo Garcia will launch her 2-year term with an inaugural reading and panel discussion at the San Diego Central Library on Tuesday, February 18th. Coming up, Beth Accomando and Yazdi Patavla join me for a preview of the Oscars and events happening around town.
Of course, as a horror fan, I was thrilled to see the amount of award nominations for The Substance and especially for Demi Moore.
KPBS Midday Edition is back after the break.
Watch programs on your schedule with the KPBS Plus streaming service. See new episodes of Nature and Nova, latest news from PBS NewsHour and KPBS Evening Edition, local shows like Ken Kramer's About San Diego. Learn more at kpbs.org/kpbsplus.
Welcome back. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. Today's Midday Movies hits the red carpet for an Oscar edition. So joining me once again are KPBS cinema junkie Beth Accomando and Movie Wallace's podcaster Yazdi Patavla. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so the 97th Academy Awards announced its nominations last Thursday. And here were the nominees for Best Song.
Amal from Amelia Perez. The Journey from the 6888, Like a Bird from Sing Sing, Mi Camino from Amelia Perez, and Never Too Late from Elton John, Never Too Late.
Woo! So, you know, Beth, I know the Best Song category really kind of annoys you, but, you know, there's been a change this year that I know you're quite pleased with.
Yes. So this year, they decided they will not present all the best songs in production numbers during the Oscar broadcast. So I am thrilled about this. I am hoping this is a harbinger of them actually removing the category completely from the nominations list, because having the nomination means that people keep adding songs to their movies for no reason other than to try and get an Oscar nomination. Very happy about this news.
All right. Yazdi, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm happy. The Oscar ceremony runs like 3.5 hours. If you can cut out half an hour just from...
just half an hour?
Okay. Yeah, just with... I'm good with that.
Okay. Well, let's start looking at the nominees this year. And Yazdi, what are the biggest snubs that you found?
Many snubs. But top on the list for me is The Room Next Door, which is Pedro Almodovar's first English language film, which is a beautiful, magnificent kind of meditation on life and death, and with gorgeous acting. And that movie was completely shut out, which is a shame. Say what you might about the movie Night Bitch, I thought Amy Adams in that is so good, and she definitely deserved recognition in the best female category. And then I think the one that stings the most of all for me is that the movie Challengers was completely left out. It was left out from best film, best director, the lead actors. But even within that, I think the one nomination that it missed, which is completely inexcusable, is for its score, because the musical score in that film is just incredible.
Let's listen to some of it. This is Match Point by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Well, it's got a lot of energy for sure. Beth, the score is the only thing you like about the film, though.
Yes, I can't agree with Yazdi about the film as a whole being snubbed, but I do agree the score was awesome. In fact, it was the only thing that kept me watching the movie.
All right. Well, what did Oscar fail to recognize this year?
All right, I'm going to say this even though it may not be a popular thing, but Megalopolis, I'm sorry, I know it was kind of a glorious mess and it was flawed, but the craft categories, the production design, the costume design, hair and makeup, I mean, all of those things were just spectacular. And I feel like it should have gotten something in one of those categories, but I do feel that Hollywood was prejudiced against it. I think they didn't like the fact that Coppola made this film completely outside the Hollywood studio system, and this is kind of their way of punishing him for that. Another one that I feel got overlooked unfairly is Blitz, and this is from the British director Steve McQueen. And this so captured what it must have felt like to be in the Blitz in London during the war. The soundscape on this was amazing, the performances, the young kid. I'll also quickly mention Last Showgirl, which the actresses in that, Pamela Anderson and Jamie Lee Curtis, unfairly overlooked. But I think the snub that hurts the most or stings the most is Clarence Macklin. So he is part of the RTA, which is this rehabilitation through the arts. He was in the film Sing Sing, playing a character much like himself. And, you know, his whole life represents this healing through the arts, this rehabilitation through the arts. And his performance was just spectacular. And when he reads Shakespeare, you just want to see him do a whole performance.
When we are born, we cry because we're born to a stage of fools. Mm. And I said, yo, whoever wrote this, man, had to did a bed before, you know?
So I really feel like that was something unfairly overlooked.
Very powerful movie for sure. Beth, were there any nominations that really surprised you and just made you smile?
There actually were a few. I think the one that was the biggest surprise for me was Nickel Boys. The film is done completely from the point of view of the two characters, so the perspective changes, but it's told, it's a lot like a Terrence Malick film where it's told in these like brief moments and flashes and memories. It's not a linear narrative script in a traditional sense. So I was really surprised that a film that kind of blew past these traditional boundaries got recognition from the Academy, especially in the Best Picture category. So I was really thrilled to see that. In the documentary category, Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat, again, this was a dense documentary, heavily layered. You were getting images with information, text and graphics with information, voiceover with information, and you were trying to pay attention to all of this in a 2.5-hour documentary. And it was so engrossing and engaging. But I thought the complexity of the format might be something that would put off some Academy voters. But I will say in the acting category, my big joy was Yura Borisov in Anora. He plays Igor, and he hardly has any lines, and yet he is so compelling and engaging. And with so little dialogue, he completely wins us over. And then, of course, as a horror fan, I was thrilled to see the amount of award nominations for The Substance, and especially for Demi Moore. And we can hear a little bit of her in this clip from The Substance when she's running her workout show.
Hang in there, ladies. You've got it. You've got it. Woo! Ah, great workout, ladies. All right, I hope I see you next week for Sparkle Your Life. We're going to work on the lateral abs, you know, the most difficult part to sculpt. But in the meantime, take care of yourself.
Wow. It reminds me of the trips to Vic Tanny's when my mom was going and I was little. Oh, my gosh. Well, Yazdi, which nominations were unexpected for you and really pleased you?
Yeah, so first of all, I would agree with Beth on the Yura Borisov nomination on Anora. He's a pretty famous actor in Russia, but not well-known stateside at all, and he's kind of the movie's secret weapon. You don't really realize how important his character is until that character develops, and so I'm so glad that he got the recognition. But I'm really happy that Sebastian Stan is having such a good year. He was in two movies which were very well received. Interestingly, he got the Best Actor nomination for The Apprentice. Actually, in my opinion, I think he should have been nominated for the other film, which is A Different Man. I'm also a big, big fan of the movie Flow, which picked up a Best Animated Movie, but also surprisingly picked up a Best International Film nomination as well. And that movie, it's just a salve for the soul, I think. It's lovely. Finally, I'm just so pleasantly surprised that a movie that nobody's heard of, which actually isn't even released, it's releasing this Friday, a Brazilian movie called I'm Still Here, did so well at the Oscars, and it picked up Best Film, Best International Film, as well as the lead female acting category. So I'm very pleasantly surprised.
All right. Well, okay, so if you could replace three of the Best Pick nominees that you disapprove of, which would you remove and what would you replace it with? Yazdi, I'll start with you on that.
Yeah, so I actually think if you look at the 10 movies nominated this year for Best Film, it's actually a pretty good list. There's something for everyone. You have the big blockbusters like Dune and Wicked. You have a movie like The Substance, which even 3 or 4 years ago would not have even been considered for nomination. There are smaller movies like The Nickel Boys. It's a really good category. Having said that, I would personally replace Wicked, which I think is celebrated enough. I mean, everybody loves it. I would replace that.
Not everybody.
Well, yeah. So I would replace Wicked with Challengers. Again, I've spoken about this movie before. Unlike Beth, I really love it. It's sexy and it's original and it's unpredictable. And it's just these three characters literally bumping against each other. Love that. I would also replace Emilia Perez with the movie that Beth talked about just a few minutes ago, which is Sing Sing. Mm-hmm. I think Sing Sing is such a beautiful, heartfelt movie. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong about Emilia Perez. That movie has so much energy to spare. It is all razzle-dazzle. But I think it kind of makes a lot of missteps as far as the plot is concerned. And finally, A Complete Unknown is a perfectly good film, but I think it's very workmanlike. It does its job and it does it very well. But I would personally have replaced it with wonderful smaller films that could have used the recognition, movies like Didi or Love Lies Bleeding or All We Imagine Is Light.
Beth, I think you were even less pleased. So
I always seem less pleased than Yazdi,
yeah,
right?
Really, this is becoming a pattern, I see. What would you do? What would you replace?
Definitely, I would take Wicked out. 2.5 hours, and it's not even done. So One of my favorite films from last year was a horror film called Strange Darling, which I hate to say anything about it because it's the surprise of where it goes that is so effective. But I will say that it is such a carefully calibrated movie, excellently scripted, precisely edited, well acted, like so good on so many points that I would definitely put it up there in the best film category and replace Wicked with that. I also have some problems with Emilia Perez. I love this director, Jacques Audiard. He's very flamboyant and audacious, and I love that he tackles cinema in very exciting ways. But I had some issues with how the plot used transitioning and a character who transitions as kind of a gimmick in the plot. So I would replace it with a film that I think has much more interesting and layered representation of trans characters, and that's I Saw the TV Glow. I also think, even as audacious as Emilia Perez was, I think I Saw the TV Glow is even more ambitious. And this was directed by Jane Schoenbrunn, and she identifies as trans, feminine, and non-binary. And I think she tells a story of the trans community, I think, in a much more interesting way. And I think part of the problem with that film is that there is a bleakness and darkness to it. And I think Emilia Perez feels much more celebratory. So I can understand why, like, voters might not have picked it. But I just think it was an amazing film from last year. And then I would also replace A Complete Unknown, but I would probably put in Blitz because I really thought that was a wonderful film.
Well, we asked some San Diego cinephiles their thoughts on the Oscars, and here's what they had to say.
Hey, it's Eddie Garola from Popcorn Reef. And I am upset about some of the things the Academy did this year. Gladiator 2 not getting a Best Picture nod, not getting a Ridley Scott nod, not getting a Denzel Washington nod. I thought that movie was top tier Ridley Scott.
Hi, this is Gabby, aka 7 Octobers, the host of Nightmare on Cedric Avenue podcast. I was really shocked that Strange Darling didn't get a nomination for either Best Cinematography or Best Picture. It was one of my favorite films of 2024.
Hello, my name is Celeste Lopez, and I'm a full-time security here in San Diego. I believe that one of the biggest snubs to come out of the Oscars was the omission of Nicole Kidman, as she did not receive a nomination for Best Actress, despite all the critical acclaims of her role in Baby Girl.
Baby Girl not getting major nominations. I think that that movie was really a triumph for A24 and everybody involved in it.
If I had to, like, replace any nomination, I think it would be in the Best Original Song category, and I would remove Mi Camino from the Emilia Perez movie and replace it with Smile 2, New Brain is the name of the song.
I was also very happy to see The Substance, a personal favorite of mine, getting notoriety, as I feel the film truly deserved all three nominations.
Hey everyone, Sterling Anno here. I just wanted to take a moment to thank the Academy from the bottom of my heart for nominating Luca Guadagnino's Challengers for not only Best Original Score, Best Editing, and Best Lead Actor. Oh wait, I forgot, they gave all of those actually to Wicked and Emilia Perez.
Okay, so we've been talking a lot about movies, and I'm curious to know if you all ever leave the theaters and then just kind of get out in the world and do something fun. What?
Not in the sun, but yes.
No? Okay. What's happening this weekend?
My second love after movies is food. So, you know, food and movies, nothing's better than that. So I'm really excited that the San Diego Restaurant Week starts. It's a really good opportunity to go to some of the more expensive restaurants and have a tasting of their, you know, menu at much lower prices. So I'm looking forward to that. And then this weekend is also the Chinese Lunar New Year, and there's going to be celebrations all around town at SeaWorld, San Diego Zoo, at the Mission Valley Mall. And finally, the Old Globe opens its new season with the play Appropriate, which was playing on Broadway a little while ago. And it's supposed to be about two siblings, two brothers who show up at their deceased father's home to kind of clean out the home, and they find a relic which makes them rethink their whole family. So I kind of like those kind of deep, dark secrets kind of play. So I'm looking forward to watching that as well.
Wow. Great recommendations there. Beth, what do you have?
Well, speaking of Lunar New Year, my grandfather was Chinese, so I am hosting the Chinese New Year meal at my home on Saturday. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do anything else this weekend. But if I did, I was desperately trying to get into puppy yoga. I feel like world events are making me a little stressed out. And having a bunch of puppies run over me while I try to do yoga sounds really appealing. But if you're into games, GamerCon is returning to 10th Avenue Arts Center this weekend, and that's always fun. And then I am a total vintage flea market type person. So Vintage Social Club San Diego has a vintage flea market this weekend over at the Normal Heights Masonic Center.
That sounds interesting. What kind of vintage things do you find at that market?
I mean, you can find all sorts of dolls.
Oh, no.
Ventriloquist dummies.
Come on. No. All the creepy things. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can find lovely things also. I mean, I was at one and I found an old Italian cookbook. So you can find books, you can find clothes, you can find all sorts of things. But I do look for ventriloquist dummies just to scare my friend.
Okay. Cassie, what do you think about that?
No, I think I'll come. I'll come for the cookbook, but not for the dummy. No.
Well, for our final recommendations for the weekend, let's go to a local artist.
Hi, I'm Jen from Horrorgasm. We're an indie comic imprint, and we also host horror-themed events throughout San Diego. But this weekend, I'm excited about Punxsutawney Sunday at Winston's in Ocean Beach. Doors open at 3 p.m. It features Mo and the Failure, The Midnight Block, and more. I love shows like this because it's punk rock at a reasonable hour, and I can't think of a better way to spend a Sunday in San Diego than listening to local punk music and enjoying the beach.
All right. Well, I want to thank the artist and our guest, KPBS cinema junkie Beth Accomando and Movie Wallace podcaster Yazdi Pathavala. The 97th Academy Awards will be broadcast on Sunday, March 2nd. You can find the complete list of nominees as well as more information on our weekend recommendations at kpbs.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
KPBS believes in the power of storytelling. For 65 years, we've been amplifying San Diego voices, sharing stories that shape our community and preserve our place in history. Your support ensures that KPBS continues to be a trusted source of information, empowering our community to learn and thrive. When you support KPBS today, you protect our story. Please give online at kpbs.org to make a contribution today.